same tape, huh?
Yeah. I fooled around with it at the office and I got it to work.
Okay, but there's one thing I want to ask you. Are you sure?
Yes. If this doesn't work, I think I'll just shoot myself.
Well, it isn't your fault. It's the machine. Let me see how this is. Ooh, I don't know what it's supposed to look like, Mary.
Oh, I think that looks fine. That tea looks fine.
Really hot. I mean, it looks pale.
Yeah, some of those teas look kind of pale. We're at the home of Beverly Horn at 2450 Spruce Cape Road, Kodiak, Alaska. It is April the 11th, 1996, and it's about 2:15 in the afternoon. My name is Mary Gross. I'm the interviewer. And my address is Post Office Box 4086, Kodiak, Alaska. I'm interviewing Beverly Horn in her home today about the history of the Episcopal Church in Kodiak, specifically St. James the Fisherman Episcopal Church. Beverly, what motivated people to get a church going?
Well, there was no Episcopal Church in town. It was only the Russian Orthodox, St. Mary's Roman Catholic, the Baptist Church, which is a community Baptist church. I don't think there were any others when I first came here. There might have been, you know, little groups, but I'm not sure. And there were several Episcopalians in town, plus some at the naval station that wanted a church. And so they petitioned Bishop Gordon to start a church here.
About what time? When was that?
It was in the 1960s, because the first service I attended was in 1961 in January at the Russian Orthodox Church. But I think they had an organizational meeting in December or November of 1960. At the Naval Chapel and on the base.
Oh, okay. Was there any kind of a driving influence or someone who had a leader with a specific vision at that time?
I don't really know, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't involved in the very beginning, but I know that Doris and Bob Simon were very instrumental, and Chuck and Fran Powell, and Basil and Dorothy Clark. They were all Episcopalians and wanted a church. And then there were several people on the naval station. There was a Mr. and Mrs. Campbell, whom I didn't know, George and Laura LaCours, Ray and Roberta Robson, and Bill and Marion Soule, who are staunch Lutherans, and there was no Lutheran church here either. But they worked very hard with us to get the Episcopal Church going.
Wow. That was a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Those are just the ones that I can think of offhand.
It's quite a list. When did the Lutheran Church get started?
That didn't get started until, you'll have to excuse me now.
Certainly.
Stop the Lutheran Church got started. Oh. Sometime in the 60s, must have been about 60. Boy, I don't know, Mary, exactly. But they were with us for 11 years. And it was when Father Bullock was here when we first started meeting at our church, the Lutherans did. So it must have been 6 or 7 years after the Episcopal Church started. And it's in my book, but I can't tell you the exact date.
Okay. Now, you said that the first services were in the basement. First service was January 1961 in the basement of the Russian Orthodox Church.
Mm-hmm.
So that must have been pretty crowded.
Yes, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
But it was when we were trying to find a place to start a church. The Father Roman Sturmer, who was a He was a displaced person from Russia. He'd come through the Philippines and to Kodiak. I mean, I don't know how the route was, but he had, when he was in the Philippines, he was looking for a place to stay or have a church service in the Russian Orthodox faith, and someone there loaned them, you know, let them use their church. And so when we were looking for a place, he offered to let us use the basement of the church to meet. And it was very small. We just had to stand, and everything had to be brought in, you know, to use. But that was, we did that for a while until we could find a place to meet. Mm-hmm. And we eventually rented the 3 rooms from the National Guard Armory to have on Sundays, and had our church, well, on Father Hall would come over once a month from Seward. You probably want to go back to the original priest. And
yeah, who was the first? But Father Hall wasn't the first priest.
No. Tom Cleveland was our first priest. And he was a priest at Palmer, which was a pretty new congregation too, and Bishop Gordon just had him come over here once a month and to help us get started.
Okay, so your first priest was a supply priest.
Yes.
Why did he discontinue coming?
Because in Tanana, there was another church, St. James Episcopal Church there, and caught fire, the rectory caught fire, and Curtis Edwards, who was the priest there, tried to save his children, but he died and lost 2 children in this fire. And so Bishop Gordon wanted somebody to go up there and be there all the time, mm-hmm. you know, another priest, and so he moved Tom Cleveland to Tanana. And then he asked Father Hall, who was the priest in Seward, to come over here once a month to supply us. And he first came, he started coming in May of 1961 when we had a crab festival booth.
What did you have in your booth?
Hot dogs and coffee then. Mm-hmm. And it was just a very crude affair with plastic over it. And we have a picture of Governor Egan there too. He visited our booth, and I don't know if he had a hot dog or what I did, but anyway, he was there. It was fun, those first few years.
Oh, that sounds fun. Now, when Father Hall came over, was the ferry running from Seward to here then?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Boy, I don't know how he got here. I know we had to pay his way. I think he just drove over to Homer and caught a plane over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he came by plane. Yeah, the ferry was, I don't know, remember. When did the ferry start? I don't know.
Okay. Now, how long did Father Hall continue as a supply priest?
He came to us until June of 1962, when Bishop Gordon sent Father Bullock, Don and Evelyn Bullock, Don was a deacon. He graduated from the Berkeley Seminary and wanted to come to Alaska, so he came, and Bishop Gordon sent him to us to be our priest. And then he was a priest, I mean, he was ordained here. He was ordained here at St. James, a fisherman.
Is he the only priest that's been, was ordained at St. James?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do you know when that was?
I'm going to have to get my book, Mary. You have it? You want real dates, I can't tell you.
Was it before the earthquake?
Oh yeah, but before the earthquake. See, there's Well, he came in June of 1962.
Mm-hmm.
With Evelyn and his four children, and then later on they had another child in September, October of that year. We had our first meeting in our church building on November 4th of 62.
November 4th, 1962, in the new church.
Yeah, when Father Hall was coming over, we started drawing a plan. Well, Bishop Gordon appointed these people to be our bishop's committee, so mm-hmm. their job was to find a place to have our church services and then to find land to build a church.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the people on the bishop's committee were Basil Clark, John Lotz, Chuck Powell, Doris Simon, and George LeCours. And they found these six lots up where the church is located now and made arrangements to buy them and started construction. They bought a building at the out on the base, an old army building from Fort Greeley mm-hmm. that they were getting rid of out there, and the men tore it down and brought it in and used that lumber to build our church.
Wow.
So it's old Navy, you know, it was the army, but
that was from Fort Greeley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was, the building started under Father Hall?
Well, he had it, you know, he was instrumental in the design, and of course the bishop's committee, they decided how to do it and everything. They hired Mr. Crittenden from Anchorage, the architect, to draw it up and approved it and got the loans and everything, what had to be done.
Is that the Mr. Crittenden that still lives here in town?
No.
Okay.
This is somebody in Anchorage.
Then the building was, you were into the building in November, then was it totally, completely done? And
no, hardly, Mary. it was nothing. I mean, it was just a shell, and it was actually a work party. We had this service, and that was supposed to be a work party afterwards to insulate and, you know, put up walls and just work at it, because it was really cold. And so Al Sontner was hired to put the building up, and Lou Horn did most of the finish work inside. But we got a space heater mm-hmm. to heat the building a little bit. You know, it was a big one of these blower things that was just noisy and horrible and smelled awful.
Like diesel?
Yeah, and so they'd run that for a while, and then we'd have part of the service, and we'd all get cold, they'd turn it on for a while, and so it was kind of a mixed up service, but we were just so happy to be in the building, you know, our own building.
Oh, yeah.
And so we could have a home.
Have your own place to put prayer books and materials and supplies.
Well, I should tell you about Mary and Trent. That's another one. John and Mary and Trent were instrumental too in getting the church started. And Marion was a wonderful person. Had a Volkswagen station wagon, and she carried all the things that we needed for, you know, the communion things they got a metal Navy locker, and mm-hmm. everything was carried around in this locker, the chalice and the paten and the, you know, whatever we needed for the linens and everything, the candles, the candlesticks, the Bible, whatever. And that lady, and then Lou made a folding altar that could fold up.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd carry that around till we got our own building. She did it all the time. She always carried these things around in her Volkswagen. Set them up, take them down, You know, and she was just a wonderful person. But then the Trents moved to Anchorage, and she was killed in an automobile accident there.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that was sad. But our Red Burson Vale is a memorial to Marion Trent.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how things get done.
Yes, it is. Yeah. That is how things get done. And so the completion was under Father Bullock.
Yes.
And the new service was with Father Bullock.
With Father Bullock,
Had he been? And he hadn't been ordained by then.
No, he must have been ordained, and I think he was ordained in January of 63.
Mm.
Okay. Because, Jeffrey was born in 62, and I think it was in January 63 he was ordained at the church. Because I know they were still doing things on that building to try to finish, you know, in time for the ordination, to try to get it more completed, you know. Mm-hmm. They were doing a lot of stuff. Wasn't completed. It was definitely not completed.
Why did Father Bullock leave?
I guess because I don't really know why, except that he'd been here 7 years, and at that time, well, it was just beginning to be where they had a choice, kind of. And I guess he felt it was time to move. Mm-hmm. And so he got a call from Ketchikan, and that's where Father Hall had been. So then our bishop's committee called Father Hall to come back here and be our full-time priest. That was in 1969.
Now the bishop's committee, does that serve sort of in the same capacity that the vestry does now?
Yes.
What changes or what brought about the ability of priests to choose where they wanted to go and for parishes to be able to select their priests?
Well, it must have been something to do with the diocese of the national church.
Okay.
Because the bishops, you know, were they decided when to send a priest, where to send them, and, you know. But I'm not sure how that came about, except that everything's changing, and I think more people wanted to have more say in who they had, and then they started having the search committees, which is really big job.
Yes, they are.
It's difficult choosing somebody.
Who was the priest during the 64 earthquake?
Father Bullock.
And did the church have any specific role in the community at that time?
Well, we were there. Mm-hmm. Father Bullock, I think, was kind of in charge of the Red Cross. So he was right in the middle of doing a lot of things in the community. But he had services every single night up at the church after it happened. And I went to several of them. It was really a nice thing to have.
It would be a nice thing.
Yeah. It was available to people if they wanted to. I'm sure we were helping, you know, helping people when we could, how we could. But it was pretty devastating, the whole, the earthquake happened on Good Friday, okay, and so Sunday morning is Easter, and we went to church that morning, and while we were at church, somebody came and told Father Bullock that there was going to be another tidal wave, and it was going to be 90 feet high, and that everybody had to evacuate, you know, had to get up on the mountain again, and that that scared me because Lou was home by himself. I had all the kids with me at church, and he was here cleaning the furnace, trying to get it to run again. I knew he was in the basement. If it was going to be another tidal wave, he'd be in it because we had about 8 feet of water from the tidal wave in our basement the first time. So I didn't know what to do. I was really upset. Everybody was upset. You know, that really was scary.
Yes.
When you heard that again. And I mean, if we really thought about it, we knew it wouldn't happen because it was no earthquake. I mean, it was aftershock, but there was no earthquake like the first earthquake. But, you know, we just went into orbit, I guess you'd call it. So I left the kids at the church because I knew it was higher. You know, nothing would happen to them. And I came home and I said, there's going to be another tidal wave and we got to get out of here. And I said, what do we take? This time we're not going to be able to save anything, you know. So we took some blankets and some food and the pictures, kids' pictures and stuff like that, and got in the car and went up to the church. And they weren't there. The kids were gone. And so we went to Father Bullock's and Evelyn's, who lived in the Lucian Homes, but further up higher.
Oh, okay.
You know, up on High Street. No, it wasn't on High Street. It was up...
Hillside?
No, it wasn't Hillside. It was up by the... You know, up where Braun of Heights is now. That row of houses up there. And so there, they'd taken him up there. But... well, everything kind of calmed down afterwards. So then... all these kids were up there, and they had five children. I had five children. I don't know how many other children were there. So we finally took our kids and went to the church. We had bread and peanut butter and jelly, and we made sandwiches. And that's when we met Betty and Rudy Lawrenson and their kids.
Wow.
That afternoon.
On Easter Sunday, 1964.
Yeah.
Wow. They were at the church, too?
I think they were at the church. I don't know whether they were. Probably they were there. I don't remember now who was there, because... But then I remember us having peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at the church that afternoon. We finally came home because they called it off, you know, and nothing had happened. But it really scared everybody.
That'd be so horrifying after that earthquake and the tidal wave.
Yeah.
And you've had enough time to inventory the damage to get a scare like that. That'd be...
But, you know, there were lots of aftershocks, and they were big,
yeah.
You know, but they didn't last. The earthquake lasted. I mean, it went a long time.
Yeah.
It wasn't a short one.
Mm-mm.
So that was kind of scary. Anyway, that was exciting. And it was really cold that day, too. It was blowing northwest. It was about 14 above and trying to snow, and oh, it was awful. Everybody running around up the mountain, you know.
Cold.
Yeah, it was pretty cold.
As head of the Red Cross, did Father Bullock have a lot of other roles in the community?
He served on the city council for a term. He was pretty visible in the community. He started the Fleet Parade during the Crab Festival, and he was a public relations man before he became a priest for our last territorial governor Mike Stepovich. And so he was originally a journalist, but he was so impressed with Bishop Gordon that he went into the ministry.
Wow. That's quite a jump from...
Yeah, it was.
Public relations.
He went back to school and became a priest. And, but that's what Bishop Gordon did. He got lots of nice young priests up here. That's what he did. He was really good at that.
Well, were they a lot of visionary leaders that were able to propel the church?
Yeah, they
forward.
Were really you know, a young group, and they oh I knew most of them, you know, in the early years that I was in the church. And they were all just energetic young priests that, and they loved Bishop Gordon, you know. He was just a wonderful bishop.
He sounds like he was a very dynamic leader.
He was charismatic, because I guess is the word you'd use now, because, you know, he's okay. Very, people just loved him, and he'd go on tours to raise money, and he had a airplane that he flew, the Blue Box, and he's a pilot from, you know, an Alaskan pilot.
Wow, so he was able to get himself around then pretty, mm-hmm. pretty easily.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Then, after Father Bullock, who was the priest at St. James?
Well, Father Hall.
Father Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he came from Ketchikan.
Yeah.
Then how long was Father Hall, what years were Father Hall, did Father Hall serve that second time?
Excuse me, he came in 69, and he retired in January of 83. So he was here for the whole, you know, all the 70s, and lots of changes in the church.
Excuse me a minute, I'll let you pop out. Okay, come on.
Window, wherever the animals are, I know that's where Lou is. They have to follow him.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that funny? They're like little kids.
Yeah, there's like little kids following him around. So now, Father Hall
was here from 1969 to 1983.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
When was the rectory built? I had always assumed that the rectory was built when the church was built.
No, the rectory was built after the tidal wave. We'd been renting that house in Aleutian Homes for the Bullocks, but there was, you know, we'd started making plans to build a rectory,
mm-hmm.
and we got a $10,000 grant from the UTO mm-hmm. to do it, to help to build this rectory. And so right after the tidal wave, they started building it because they wanted to give the message to this community, you know, that we were going to rebuild and be here. So we did.
That's an important message. Now that was under Father Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
And the grant came from United Thank Offering?
Mm-hmm. I think that was our first grant that we got, UTO grant.
The 70s was a time of really an incredible change in our countries, the 60s and the 70s combined. How has the role of women changed through the church?
Well, we've become equals.
Have we really?
In quotes. But we do have women priests now. You know, started out women deacons and now women priests. But it's been a long, hard struggle. And before that, we used to have the Episcopal Church women were kind of a separate group. We, you know, worked separately from the men. It seemed like the men ran things and the women did the altar and had the bake sales and those kinds of things, but now it's changed to we're supposed to be equals, to do the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there are now, is there one woman bishop in the National Church?
Was that Barbara, somebody in Massachusetts? There's a woman bishop in New Zealand. I don't know if there's other ones or not. I think there's two in the United States. But I'm not sure who the other one is.
Okay, and then Father Hall was until 1983. Now, why did he quit?
Well, I think he was just getting to the age where he, you know, he needed to make a decision. So he
just decided to retire then.
I guess. He was at retirement age, so.
Okay.
During the 1970s, while St. James the Fisherman was sharing our church with the Lutherans, and I'm not, we were together for 11 years. We shared the church with them. In 1968, they started using the church, and then in 79, they built their own church. So there's your dates.
Okay.
And it worked out really well. We got to be very close with them. You know, that had a nice relationship. We had Thanksgiving, always had Thanksgiving together, and pancake supper on Shrove Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And then we'd have a picnic in the summertime together. And when they moved into their church, then we alternate between having our Thanksgiving services. And then the last few years, we've been doing the soup and bread with St. Mary's and St. Paul's and St. James.
I say that it sounds like those are the traditions that are still in place today.
Well, yeah, right.
We expanded to, some of them include St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they call them the three saints.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so after Father Hall, Father then, White?
Yeah, we had a interim priest, Tom White,
mm-hmm.
for 6 months, and he came and shook us up pretty good.
What did he do?
It's just a big change, you know, different priest, mm-hmm. after so long having Father Hall. And that's what he was supposed to do. An interim priest is supposed to come in and stir things up, you know, and help you to find another priest, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
We had a search committee. Well, and then they decided to hire him for a full-time priest. And so he came back, and he stayed only 10 months, and he left. He didn't like us, I don't think. He just told us we didn't have enough money to pay a full-time priest, and I'm not sure. He just never should have come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was an interim, and they're not supposed to be considered to be your priest.
Yeah.
And so it was a mistake, and it ended up, we were really down, we were in debt, and we were mad because he just quit on us, you know.
Yeah.
So then we had to start over a search committee again, searching, and then we found Father Herb,
mm-hmm.
and he came, and the National Church helped pay his salary for 6 months until we could get on our feet.
And so he was pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't know why. I think it was, nobody was paying attention to the money, you know, or, you know, doing things. I'm not sure exactly what was happening, because I was never on the vestry or anything at that time.
Let's see. So when was the first search committee that St. James had?
Well, when Father Tom came to help us try to find somebody. Hmm. And we interviewed people. We had them come up, you know, different people. But I think some of them thought this was just a free trip to Alaska, and they really weren't interested in being a priest here. We did have one that we wanted him to come, but he had applied to the Navy to be a Navy chaplain,
mm-hmm.
And so after we decided on him, he got called to be a Navy chaplain, so we missed out on him. And so that's when Tom came back.
That was Father Shepherd?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's been some disappointment with him.
Yeah, because we found him again and he still didn't come, so.
Yeah.
That was too bad. I think he would have, if we could have gotten him the first time, he would have been a really good priest.
Yeah, I thought he was, the second time when he came, I was impressed with him.
Yeah, he was a pastoral person, you know, cared about people and
mm-hmm.
was really a caring person.
Yeah.
And I think he really wanted to come, but his wife didn't want to. And if your wife doesn't want to come to Kodiak, you better not come because it does not work out.
No, it won't. It sure won't. So there was Father Cleveland as a supply priest, Father Hollis, supply priest. Father Bullock was the first full-time priest. Then Father Hall for 13 years. Then Father White. Was there any kind of an interim priest between the time Father White left and Father McMurtry came on board? Interim or a supply?
Mark Besser came over, and he would be helping us. He's so upbeat. He was just wonderful, you know, to come and help us. He'd bring his guitar, and he sort of stirred us up and kept us going.
Inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you were down in the dumps then.
Well, it's a hard process. This search committee business is really a hard process because you have applications and you have to, I mean, especially when you don't have a lot of money to spend, you know, and you want to bring them up, but you're limited in how much you can do. And then some people come and they don't want to, they just, no way. Like the last time, this last time, we had somebody come up. They got off the plane. They got on it before it left. Never stayed here at all. Never came in to be interviewed or anything.
Wow.
Why? I don't know. You know, I don't know what happened, but they didn't even stay.
Wow. Didn't even, not even an hour.
No. They just got on the plane and went back again.
Plane. Jeez.
Which wasn't a very good choice, you know. But I think maybe he had second thoughts when he came up and he thought, no, he couldn't do this.
Yeah. Yikes. I had a little mind. And then Father McMurtry was here
six years. And during his time, we became a self-supporting parish.
Mm-hmm.
We renovated the building and added onto it, made a parish hall. Went into debt for over $100,000. And then the women, they weren't going to do the altar area, and the women got angry and said, we are going to do the altar area. And mm-hmm. they got a loan for $40,000 to do that part. And then they paid it off in 3 years, having by money raisers and
bake sales and
the mini bazaar and whatever we did, I don't remember. Sold sweatshirts and all the things we did.
Cookbooks.
Mm-hmm. So we have it. We have our church.
It's been a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of different fundraising activities has St. James undertaken throughout the years?
Well, in the beginning we had bake sales, and we did a little bazaar for a few years, and we did the Pronto Pup booth and during the crab festival.
How did that get started?
Oh dear. We started with hot dogs, and then after a couple of years we decided we needed something special, you know, something different to mm-hmm. attract people to come. Because other people had hot dogs and hamburgers and stuff, so we decided to do Pronto Pups, and that's a hot dog deep fat fried in a batter
mm-hmm.
with a stick on it. And Doris and Bob Simon and their kids came to our house one afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and we tested batter till the kids refused to test anymore. We got our batter recipe just down pat, you know, and so we started selling Pronto cups. And
you had to do your batter by from scratch.
Mm-hmm. We did it.
Jeez.
We did it from scratch.
No mix, no, not even a recipe.
No, we started. But it was good. I mean, it turned out, and everybody got to liking it. They felt bad when we quit doing Pronto cups, but it was a lot of work. Usually it would be a couple would kind of be in charge and of, you know, getting the booth set up and getting everything, and then volunteers would work, and you always came out smelling like a Pronto pup. But they were really, I mean, it was really a success while we did it, except it got, as the years went by, it became less and less profitable. It was more work than it was. There were more regulations and things, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are.
And so it just got to be too much work and not enough fun. It wasn't any fun anymore, you know. But to begin with, it was fun. And we had this, we wanted to raise money for our church, and that was good.
What other kinds of fundraisers has St. James undertaken?
Well, when we were building the church, what did we do? We had progressive dinners.
Mm-hmm.
We had...
building the church as in the adding on to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We tried to involve the community somewhat, you mm-hmm. know, to sell memorial, I mean, they, you know, things like that. And, oh gosh, Mary, I don't remember all the things we did. We've done a lot of things.
Yeah. How many different bishops have served served as Bishop of Alaska since St. James has started?
Well, first you had Bishop Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
He retired in 1974. And then we had Bishop Cochran, who was chosen. He was here for about 7 years, I think. And then we had Bishop Harris, and I think his term was about 7 years, too. Then we had Bishop Charleston,
mm-hmm.
and he was only here 5 years, and he resigned because of family problems. And so now we don't have a bishop right now.
I'm going to stop the tape and turn it over. How important is a family for someone, a supportive family environment for someone to be an effective minister, especially in a remote location like Alaska?
How important is the family?
Yeah.
I think it's probably very important to have a family of your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be difficult. And I think that we see that now with Father Paul, and no family support or anything, you know. I think he's doing his job, but, you know, I think he could do better if he had somebody to share it with. Or, yeah.
Yeah. That's my sense. And but I'm also thinking about Bishop Charleston.
Yeah.
And then,
I don't understand what happened there. I was at his ordination and his consecration, I should say.
Yes.
And Susan seemed to be very supportive. I mean, they were so happy about it, especially the bishop. I was at the convention where he was elected too, you know, and he was head and shoulders above anybody else to choose. And mm-hmm. He was just wonderful. But maybe his energy was, you know, directed so much into being the bishop for everybody, because mm-hmm. everybody really liked him mm-hmm. and just, you know, thought he was so wonderful, that maybe he neglected his family. I don't know. Has the one boy. But they did come down, you know, and when we were, after Father Herb left, and we had a camp over it. Did you go to that?
No, I missed that
first one.
That first one, I missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really great. He and Suzanne and the boy came down, and I think they had a wonderful time. But she was having problems even then, and she just felt isolated, I think. I mean, she was from New York City, so you can imagine. And then the darkness up in Fairbanks was preying on her, and she was alone a lot because he was mm-hmm. traveling so much. So, I mean, it was a combination of things that just didn't work out.
Yeah. Does the church make any, has it in the past, or does it now, or has it in the past, do anything, incorporate any mechanism or anything to take that into consideration, the role of, if somebody is married and their spouse doesn't really want to come?
I don't know, as the diocese as a whole, I don't really know how they do that.
Okay. I had thought there might be something that the priest's wife also had to sign.
I don't think so. I think you just make a contract with your priest, and you know, it's more like a business now. I don't think being a priest is a business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's a lot more to being a priest than a job. I mean, you have certain duties you have to do, but there's also more to it, you know. You're dealing with so many different kinds of people and different situations. And
do you think it's more like a way of life, almost?
Yeah, I think they have to be pretty dedicated to what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, what kinds of things, when you think back over St. James, is there anything that just really pops up in your mind about the church and the people that have gone there?
Well, let's see, it's been about 33 or 4 years, and there's been a lot of people come and go. We've had we've always had people from the station, you know, the naval station,
mm-hmm.
and that when it closed in 72, the Coast Guard came in, and we've always had Coast Guard people, and it's just added so much to our church. You know, whatever they contribute is just, it really broadens our perspective, and they feel like it's their home. And a lot of them come back. You know, when they come back on another duty, they come back, and a lot of them just feel like this was home. And they write back, and, you know, they're really...
They stay in touch.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably the early years, as far as I'm concerned, was the things when we were building, starting out and raising our kids and stuff. And oh.
She misses her brother.
Oh, she just made a pain. That's all.
Hey, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Lindley, stop it. Father Bullock did a wonderful job with the young people. He had EYC,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of those young people that he nurtured, I'd say, because he did the EYC. He took them places. He did things with them and you know, taught them about the church and everything. They're coming back to the church with their families. A lot of these people are.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. At least, well, three of my kids still go to church, which is nice. And all of my grandchildren are going.
Well, isn't it one of them doesn't go because she doesn't live here anymore?
Yeah, right. So, that's the only one. But she's going to church where she lives.
Okay.
And taking her children. And, you know, like Jean Lawrenson and the mm-hmm. Lawrensons and the Reesoffs and Christy Kinter. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that are coming back. But I think it was a lot to do with the way, you know, Father Bullock was there for them when they were teenagers, growing up, you know, junior high kids. And
what did he do with them?
Well, he took them up to the ski chalet. He'd take them out to Chiniac to picnics. And he had, every Sunday night, he had ECW, and they did things. We had a Halloween party at our house one time for them, and he did parties, and you know, they had dances, and he let them play a dance at the church, and you know, they just had nice things. They just did nice things,
fun stuff that they enjoyed,
right? But I mean, they had their lessons too, but they still had socialized, you know, they had mm-hmm. some fun.
Yeah. Being social is important,
well, especially at that age, and it was nice for us. So that was good, and that was, you know, in the middle, in the 60s, when things were really changing. And but I think Kodiak probably was in the backwater, kind of.
Well, what did you have for communications at that time, in media?
Well, we had the Kodiak Mirror. Mm-hmm. We had... We had ACS, Alaska Communication Service.
What was that?
Well, that's what they set up during the war, mm-hmm. World War II, and they just kept it going. And then they had, was it in the 50s or 60s, they built the White Alice thing around the top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We had White Alice up here. We had... the ferry system started mm-hmm. in the early 60s, I think it was. And, of course, the airplanes coming over all the time.
So did you get, say, could you buy, like, today's Anchorage Daily News in the store today?
We had a paper boy that delivered them.
The Anchorage Daily News?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So you got... printed news. Did you have television?
After the tidal wave, I think we got television. We didn't have it personally for a while, but
mm-hmm.
it's yeah. It was well. There was one station, and we had the radio station at the naval station. Yeah, okay. AFRS, I think they called it,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we got the, you know, the warning about the tidal wave. There was going to be a tidal wave. But then they got flooded out, you know, the wave came in and flooded them out.
Oh,
so the only communication we had during the earthquake was ACS up on the hill where the old barn is.
Okay.
Up there.
On Burrow Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. What a nice dog.
Yes.
Wild.
Well, you can't miss it.
No. Lou just got it for her.
So, did you have national news?
Yeah, we
on
well,
TV?
through the naval station.
And yeah. It wasn't delayed, was it?
Mm-mm, I don't think so. We had telephones.
Okay.
You know. Yeah, we were modern.
Because I remember in the 60s in Anchorage, we had national news, national and international news, but we would get it the next day.
Oh. Well, we had military, you know, for a long time, and that's all we had.
Made a big difference, it mm-hmm. sounds like. Now, the Navy left in...
72.
72. And the Coast Guard took over.
Mm-hmm. Their biggest Coast Guard bases, right here in Kodiak, Alaska. Coast Guard.
Well, I think that we'll conclude this interview.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Beverly.
You're welcome.